Hey everyone, this is the beginning of a new segment that we're doing. Basically, we're switching to more of a podcast format, so we're going to be having some discussions here on News at 9. Today, Ananya couldn't make it because she is feeling a bit under the weather, so my name is Jacob Rice, and I'm joined here by the hosts of News at 9, Rajni Kaur and Jeffrey Pearson.
Hey.
How's it going, everyone?
All right, so this is a bit of a new format, so bear with us. But we're going to be talking a bit about what's been going on. So the most pressing thing that I've been hearing about right now is the election, because, I mean, literally, who hasn't been hearing about it right now? It's like, it's hard to hear about anything else with this going on. And, you know, I just want to mention, I thought this was funny. A couple, when Trump was elected, people were saying, like, you know, if Trump doesn't get reelected in 2020, you know, he's going to have to be dragged kicking and screaming out of the White House. Like, he's not going to accept the results of the election. And everyone else was like, no, you're crazy. No sitting president would ever do that.
And then he did it.
And then he did it. Like, we come to 2020 and that's exactly what he's doing. So I don't know. I think in my opinion, I don't think he's going to be gone until they literally get the Secret Service to remove him. What do you guys think?
Well, apparently, according to the U.S. law, he can't stay beyond his actual term. Like, even though he refuses to concede, the concession speech and everything is only a formality to ensure, like, goodwill between the former president and the incoming president. But
yeah,
he can't actually do anything to keep his term longer than the 4 years. I think the most he can do is just make it hard for Biden to pass anything.
Yeah, and one thing that he can definitely do is figure out some sort of constitutional workaround or loophole so that he can, like, contest every single result. I mean, he's already been trying that
with
all of his court cases, but obviously none of them have been successful because no evidence. But, like, he's definitely going to try to do everything he can and try to get himself to, you know, stay there as long as possible. What do you think, Jeffrey?
No, it's crazy because every day that he stays in the White House, he's just creating more social division.
Honestly.
Oh, yeah.
He's just kind of messing up the country, like, without a doubt. And, like, I don't want to jump to any extremes, but I think the next 4 years are going to be very interesting in the States, just with how everything's going. And sort of Trump kind of naturalized the idea that the media is constantly lying. And so, like, all his supporters just genuinely believe that everything the media is saying is just a lie from now on. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how sort of the states progress and if there, you know, if there's any conflict within the country.
Yeah. Especially with him sitting around tweeting, "I won the election," which he tweeted this morning.
Everyone's lying. I won.
And the day before. And it has 460,000 likes. Growing, and I think it's really interesting how one thing I find really interesting that Trump's been doing recently is how he's sort of pivoted on Fox News. Like, ever since Fox conceded that Biden was going to be the president-elect, he's been like anti-Fox. He's been like, Fox is run by liberals, like Fox is like, he used to be the biggest Fox News watcher, and now he's pivoted to these even further right sources like One American News Network and this other one whose name I can't remember. But it's just really interesting to me. Like, it doesn't seem like there's any, like, morals or principles that he's sticking to.
Did you guys hear how he started, like, a GoFundMe campaign or, like, a donation campaign to restore the integrity of the American election?
But apparently,
in the fine print, it says that any donations under $8,000 go to his personal expenses and legal fees. And people are actually contributing to this thing, which is the funniest part, because the former president is literally scamming innocent, well, not really innocent, because, I mean, if you fall for that, like, that's kind of sus.
Yeah, I mean, that is a scam.
Yeah, but he's scamming these regular civilians for his personal expenses, which is like, geez.
I mean, it's nothing new. I mean, billionaires scamming regular people and exploiting their labor for their own purposes. I think Trump is just the first one to do it
so publicly,
very explicitly, in a position
so unashamedly.
Of public power. Yeah. I mean, this is what it would be like if like someone like Jeff Bezos was
literally. I mean,
oh my God.
Trump's level of narcissism is just unbelievable, but it really just makes sense as to why he has so many supporters, because mm-hmm. he just says whatever he wants and yeah. he just comes across as like the most confident.
He's
just,
larger than life.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's yeah. become a God figure in the eyes of a lot of his supporters.
And at the end of the day, he's just really just a millionaire who doesn't know anything about politics. And
yeah.
if you try and tell anyone who supports him, like, the facts, they're just like, oh, you're a liberal, you know, media junkie, whatever, you know? It's really interesting to me.
And it's one thing to, like, you know, see Trump supporters on Twitter, but, like, I know people who are, like, personally who are Trump supporters.
Yikes.
And talking to them about certain things is just, like, it's really interesting. Like I don't think that we're going to be able to even get close to healing the divide mm-hmm. between the US right now in any way other than, you know, actually sitting down and talking and figuring out ways to get yeah. past this on a very personal level with members of your family and stuff, or a civil war. I really don't see either option,
because I think parts like, of the,
I don't see any alternatives.
Parts yeah. of the reason why people like Trump so much is because he doesn't try and be all proper like normal politicians do. Like, he doesn't try and mm-hmm. sugarcoat things. He's not politically correct. And people, like average everyday people who are frustrated with the way things are, felt very comforted by that, because they're like, oh, here's a politician who talks like me. He's not saying fancy words. He's not talking about abstract things that I can't really understand. He's saying what I'm actually thinking, but is no longer okay to say out loud. So I think,
it's interesting how he tried to paint himself throughout the presidency as this like average, like working class, like he tried to paint yeah. himself to be less like a politician, more like the average person, when,
but he's never reality, worked a day in his
like,
life.
Someone like, yeah. Someone like Joe Biden is far closer to the average American than, or Bernie Sanders even far mm-hmm. closer to the average American than someone like Trump is. I mean, and I don't know, people like having someone who they can idolize. And if you're idolizing Trump, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to say at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But aside from, you know, it's relatively related to the whole Trump discussion is the COVID discussion. The vaccine, obviously, is inching closer and closer to being a reality and being widely distributed. And, you know, I think in recent years, we've seen a rise in, you know, people who are very vehemently against vaccines, or believe that vaccines cause autism or something, which
yeah.
is just the most insane thing to me.
Before we even get to vaccines, though, people are not wanting to wear the mask, which is like the most simplest thing mm-hmm. that you can yeah. do, and people still don't want to do it.
I always like to bring up the example of the seatbelts, because when seatbelts were first introduced in the 1930s or 40s, there was a very, very vocal minority of people who were actively against seatbelts,
mm-hmm.
who were saying that like seatbelts are dangerous. They would cause more deaths. Like, it's my choice whether or not I want to wear a seatbelt in the car.
Yeah.
And now seatbelts are just like a given. It's like, who the hell wouldn't wear a seatbelt? You know, it's just like common sense.
Yeah.
But like, you can find pictures from the 30s of like anti seatbelt protests, people who felt that their personal liberties were being infringed upon by like Ford Motors and GM.
I mean, I think just the general rule in life is death, taxes, and that there's about 50% of the population that will refuse to accept anyone who's trying to tell them anything. I think that's just like a general rule in just most countries, especially America, though, because they're yeah. definitely very nationalistic and yeah. very
individualistic.
Because I mean, I've never yeah. heard of an anti-mask protest in like Japan or South Korea.
No, know? Because it doesn't happen.
Because it just doesn't you know? Happen. I think it's a cultural thing with North America that they hate the idea of being told what to do, and like discipline is just not a thing.
You know? Yeah, and if these anti-mask protests do happen, they're largely as a result of Americans, like of American influence.
Yeah. Like Americans spreading that need to just be contrary to whatever the government says, regardless of how much that government order could help you and your community. You're just opposed yeah. to the idea in general of someone having to tell you what to do.
Yeah. And opposed to the idea of having a sort of duty of care
yeah.
to your neighbor or your fellow man.
Yeah.
Like the idea that like wearing a mask protects others and doesn't protect you. You know, some people in the world, I'm not going to name names or single out countries, but some people in the world think that the idea of doing something that doesn't benefit you, but only benefits others as being ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like why would I do something
exactly.
that has no direct benefit for me?
I know people personally who are like that.
Oh, same here.
Yeah.
I think we all do. And that mentality is just not present in countries that have very low rates of infection and mm-hmm. have been handling this very well, and places where collectivism is more generally agreed upon as like an idea that is useful during global pandemics.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it'll be very interesting to see, because I know there's going to be a small minority of people who just refuse to get the COVID vaccine
mm-hmm.
and then end up getting COVID and dying.
Because the thing is, it's one thing to not want to take it as soon as it comes out. Like, say it comes out in January. I don't think a lot of people would not be comfortable taking it in January. They'd probably wait yeah. to like May, June. But
yeah, there's
there's a difference between that and just not taking it ever when everyone yeah, else has taken yeah, it.
Two different stories.
I mean, we also got to take into account that there's not going to be enough vaccines for everyone
yeah.
probably until the end of next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So, because like the company Pfizer that came out with a vaccine that was 90% effective, they were saying that they would have 50 million or like 55 million vaccines by the end of this year, and like 100 and or maybe 320 million by next year. I mean, that's obviously, you know what I'm saying? That's probably just going to go to the most vulnerable population.
Yeah.
So people like us probably won't get a vaccine for a long time unless like, you know, unless other companies sort of help Pfizer or whatever, whoever makes the vaccine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like the company I did research on, Moderna, their vaccine yeah. is actually 95% effective. But for the US only, I think they only had 20 million doses available, which is wow. a and small that's like, fraction. That's
like nothing.
Yeah.
That's what is that? The US is like 370 million people.
Yeah.
So that's literally.
And like, their goal was to have 1 billion.
5% of the US population.
Yeah, their goal was to have 1 billion by the end of next year for the whole world, but that's only 1/7 of the entire world's population. So
yeah, and I mean, to be fair, there are some places that are a little bit more hard hit.
Yeah,
definitely.
Not naming any names other than the U.S. but yeah, I mean, it's tough because it like put yourself in the shoes of Justin Trudeau.
Mm-hmm.
You're suddenly getting 5 million COVID-19 vaccines ready to go, ready to
who do you pick?
How do you roll it out? Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you give it to one place and not another and then not be accused of favoritism?
Exactly.
No, I mean, that's why I think they should just really target elderly people and like people with diabetes or
underlying conditions.
Yeah.
And especially being like having them be given to like I think along with this there should be importance given to you know, the supplies that help out, like hospital beds and things.
Yeah,
they're going to be in very, very limited supply come the end of the year. And even now, I mean Ontario, I'm sure you guys heard about that Ontario projection that was like 6,500 by the end of the year. God, that's gonna absolutely cripple the like any hospitals that are in like big areas like Toronto and Peel region.
Yeah,
that's gonna need to be a worldwide effort because there are already places that are really struggling with this.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you guys if you think that it would be ethical for the vaccine companies to offer the first vaccines to countries where they have limited medical resources and limited government resources to help people who are actually sick, because one way you could argue is that
countries that are the hardest hit, you mean?
Yeah, like as opposed to first world countries, if you give it to developing countries first, assuming that they would have less resources.
Because it's tough, because you do you do you go on, you know, which countries are the hardest hit?
Yeah.
Do you go on which countries have the most cases, or that's the same thing. Do you go on which countries are the hardest hit or have the least resources to deal with it? Mm-hmm. Or do you dole it out by region? Like, oh yeah, that is tough. I think.
Because on one hand, you could argue it's like preventing them from getting to the point where they have an economic collapse or something because they don't have enough productive people. But then on the other hand, people are dying every day.
So. Exactly. And the U.S. isn't going to collapse economically, mm-hmm. but are we putting economics over people's lives?
Yeah.
It's tough. I mean, especially with the rate that it's going at now.
Yeah.
There's really no way of saying, which is why I hope that the first dose or the first round of doses is big enough that these decisions don't have to be made.
Yeah.
Because I can't see anything good out of, like, I can't see anything good coming out of a world leader having to make that kind of decision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine if
it could very well start Trudeau a war.
Oh yeah. Can you imagine if Trudeau gets the vaccines and sends them all mostly to like Toronto?
Yeah.
like a bit to Alberta and Manitoba.
And then everyone else is just like, hello, excuse me.
Yeah, the West and the East are going to be pissed. And I mean, definitely something to keep an eye on. I'm going to be keeping an eye on Moderna and Pfizer and all the other companies that are working on it. Because, you know, when that vaccine gets out there, I might wait a few weeks, but I'm going to get it as soon as I can.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think myself and everyone is getting a bit tired of all this. I think it's taken a toll.
Yeah, for sure.
And meanwhile, like in Canada, we're in a pretty okay state, like civilly, but mm-hmm. like there are countries around the world that have to deal with COVID on top.
Plus civil unrest.
Yeah.
Jeffrey, I mean, you were talking a bit earlier about some of the stuff that's been going on in Ethiopia. You want to give us a bit of background on that?
Yeah, so I'm just going to start off and say I think it's really important that people sort of pay attention to international politics, especially in like Africa and the Middle East, because these regions, like Africa and the Middle East in particular, are like extremely important regions for like the world's economic stability because of the amount of resources they produce, as well as they're just people there that are often just forgotten. Like, for example, I was looking on the news a couple of days ago. I think it was like The Guardian, like a relatively reputable source. And like the front page was like a terror attack in Austria, which I think was a bombing or something that killed two people. Mm-hmm. I scrolled all the way down to the bottom. And there was a little headline that was like 54 people beheaded in the Central African Republic by Islamist extremists, you know? And it's just like, okay, let's just, you know, oh, it's Africa. That happens all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just
stuff in the global South is just so underreported and so under like talked about just because it's like, it's, I don't want to say it's more ubiquitous, but like,
it's kind of like people expect that. It's not sensational. Yeah. You know, yeah, like if someone said, oh, dictatorship in Africa or somewhere in Asia, it's like, okay, we knew that. But if somewhere like the US, then people are like, wow, oh my gosh.
If 54 people were killed at one time in whatever circumstance, obviously beheadings are not something that really happens in America.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say 54 people were killed in like a mass shooting, God forbid, it would be national news, global news for weeks.
Yeah.
But I didn't even hear about this beheading that you're talking about.
Me neither.
Central African Republic. And I think, I mean, like, you know, this is the reality of the growing divide between the global North and the global South. I mean, I've been talking a lot about this in my classes because I'm a poli-sci student and we study a lot of stuff that's been going on around, like, you know, around the world. And I mean, these are the things that we don't really, you know, it's a very Eurocentric view.
Like, yeah.
even in thinking historically, when I think of big world events like world wars, the thought of like Africa does not even come to mind.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
like, for example, like with World War II, maybe I'm just uninformed on World War II, like in comparison to some other, like a history major, for example, but I often struggle to think of like how Asian countries were involved in World War II outside of Japan.
Exactly. Right?
And yet they were Asian African countries were like extremely involved, you know, they had lots of they were colonized, so lots of them were sending, lots of the European countries were sending African troops.
And Indian troops too.
Yeah, African, Asian, Oceanian, like everywhere. And yet only really the European troops seem to like have memorial in the West. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. And the Jap, like, everyone knows that Jews were sent to concentration camps in Europe, but I feel like very few people know that Japanese people were sent to internment camps in the U.S., even though they were U.S. citizens, not like illegal immigrants or anything, you know? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the U.S. really likes to not talk about Japanese internment camps.
Yeah.
They're, the U.S. is not, I really don't want this whole this whole segment to be us, like,
U.S. bashing.
U.S. bashing. But, like, I don't know, I feel like if you look at a country like Germany, Germany has done a really good job with coming to terms with their history.
Yeah.
After a really,
they're actually ashamed of it. Like, that's the thing. Like, the U.S. is not ashamed of white supremacy or the Confederacy. They're proud of that. Yeah. They don't want to hide it. But Germany actually feels bad about having Nazis, which is the difference.
And to be fair, I mean, they didn't really do that well after World War One. So, you know, that's how World War II sort of came to be.
Yeah,
some people. But definitely the existence of people who, like, you don't see anyone walk around in Germany waving a Nazi flag.
Exactly.
And they're asking, like, and you ask, like, why are you waving the Nazi flag? And it's like, oh, because it's my national heritage.
Like, no.
Like, for some reason, the Confederate flag is viewed differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like, oh, it's my heritage. It's my background. Like, no, in no other country in the world will you see people waving the flag of the losing side in the country's civil war.
Exactly.
It doesn't happen.
Yeah. Speaking of civil war, I'll just quickly give y'all a rundown of what's happening in Ethiopia.
Yeah.
It's kind of complicated, I'm not gonna lie, but I'll just give like a sort of brief explanation.
Yeah.
So basically, the government of Ethiopia is sort of in a conflict with the Tigray People's Liberation Front, so the TPLF, which I don't think is exactly a rebel group, but they're kind of just the militant forces in the region. So this is like, Tigray is a specific region in Ethiopia.
Right.
So the interesting thing about this, though, is that the government, like the current president or prime minister, I think is president of Ethiopia, actually won a Nobel Peace Prize last year for ending conflict with Eritrea.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, the UN's Security Council, I think the states and a couple other foreign bodies are calling for him to stop the violence. Because essentially, the government is the one that have, like, initiated the violence, even though both sides are claiming the other one did. But it's just really interesting that he won a peace prize last year, and now he's sort of, his name's sort of being tarnished. Like, it's kind of hard, really, to get fact checks from Ethiopia right now.
Yeah.
But one more key thing about this conflict is, I think a couple of days ago, the rebel forces, the TPLF, actually fired rockets into Eritrea, the neighboring country's capital, because they've been kind of tense for years. So now it's kind of not really a civil war. It's kind of becoming a regional war in the Horn of Africa, and people are really concerned that it's just going to destabilize the whole region.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, from like what little I know about Ethiopia and Eritrea is that, you know, these are two countries that, like, because of their close proximity, they've just, like, these issues are nothing new. Like this has been going on for a while. And there was the 2018 Eritrea-Ethiopia summit, which formally ended the border conflict and restored full diplomatic relations. But clearly, you know, stuff is still going on.
Yeah.
Just based on what you were saying.
Yeah, no, it's definitely crazy. And the thing about Eritrea being involved is, I don't know if either of you know, but Eritrea, as of I think like a year or 2 years ago, is the most censored country in the world.
Oh, like, really? I did not know that.
Yeah, they're the most, like, even worse than North Korea. Like, they're the most authoritarian nation. Like,
I would not have thought that.
Yeah, the president of Eritrea has been in power for, like, 27 or 30 years.
Holy.
Only has one media station, like, one news station and one newspaper. So it's just completely, like, propagandized.
So like, is he technically a president or is he a dictator, like a dictator for life?
He calls himself a president, but he's a dictator, you know?
Yeah.
it's just according to my very brief research here, it's a unitary one-party presidential republic.
Oh my God. Yeah. So
it's about as
democratic as they get.
Yeah,
unitary one-party republics, my favorite. But yeah, I don't know. I think term limits are just a good thing everywhere. I don't think anyone should be in a country for 27 years for whatever. I don't think anyone should hold any type of position for that long unless, like, here's something I've never understood, just sort of off base. But why don't Supreme Court justices have term limits?
That's a good question.
Like, I cannot think of any reason for Supreme Court justices. I know this is super off topic, but I cannot think of one reason for Supreme Court justices to not have term limits other than wanting to keep, like, either your conservative or your Democratic or conservative or liberal Supreme Court justices there for longer.
Yeah. That's a very good question.
And keeping 80-year-olds in power.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other reason.
Because it's not that there aren't any more judges that could take their place. I mean, there's millions of qualified judges.
Tons.
Yeah.
Millions of probably judges who have, like, more experience.
Yeah.
No, sorry. Not more experience, but, like,
more progressive ideas.
Newer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can't keep the same laws for a whole generation. Like, I don't think that's going to be a good way to help your country move forward.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine if U.S. presidents didn't have term limits?
Oh my God!
there have now been 45, almost 46 U.S. presidents. There probably would have been like
half that much.
Less. There would have been like 16. Because if you think of all the old presidents who like someone like, I mean, if we just look at. You know, let's assume that presidents served until they died.
Jeez. Yeah.
We would like, who's the oldest president alive today? Jimmy Carter? Is he? No, he's not alive, is he?
Mm-hmm.
Is it? The serving presidents are Bush, Obama,
Carter's still alive, actually. He's 96.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So can you imagine 96-year-old Jimmy Carter still being in office from his election?
Oh, my God.
From his election in he hasn't been president since 1981, but that would mean that the U.S. essentially would have had, assuming that they didn't call another election, the same president since 1977. And again, that's not realistic because there probably would have been an election since then, but I think term limits and some sort of limitations on these kind of things are good in all cases. I just don't understand why the U.S. Definitely. Just doesn't.
Someone said the U.S. is a third world country wearing a Gucci belt. That's probably why.
No, that's not.
Oh my God, that's funny. I got to use that line. That's hilarious.
Oh yeah. God. They like to front as if they know what they're doing and like they're the most advanced country in the world, but they're really not.
No idea.
And despite that, it's still completely fair to say that they're the most powerful country on Earth.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that, like, you know, everything that they have is like, you know, there's so much that they could be doing, and we could talk about them all we like, but they're still undoubtedly one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful country in the world. And that's the position they have.
Definitely.
Because, I mean, the amount of power that someone like Trump has is insane. Oh, man. Well, I think we've covered a lot this week. As always, I was about to say as always, but it's not really an as always. If you guys want us to talk about something in particular, we'll be posting polls on the Radio Laurier Instagram at Radio Laurier. So if you guys want to hear, make sure to hit up those polls or those questionnaires and let us know about what you guys want to hear about. And from everyone here at News at 9, thank you all for listening. And we'll be sure to see you again next week at the same time.
Take care, guys.
Thank you. Have a good week.